Hey, I'm Jamie.
And I'm Justina.
And we're the hosts of Just So You Know, a podcast where we get to the bottom of suspicious stories and outright lies we're being told by companies that profit off of animals.
You think Elon Musk is shady? Wait until you hear our episode about his sinister brain experiments.
First he ruined Twitter, now he's coming for your actual brain.
No.
We've also got one about that time I stormed the runway at New York Fashion Week to protest Coach's leather handbags.
Yeah, I heard they weren't happy about that.
I couldn't tell you. They're not talking to me at the moment.
And we're just getting started. In the coming weeks, we're going to blow the lid off of everything from shady pet dealers to monkeys held hostage by coconut milk companies to the astonishing secret behind the no animals were harmed message you see at the end of movies.
And so much more. We'll hope you join us for this surprisingly fun journey full of strange characters, secretive companies, and a whole world of stuff they really don't want you to know.
Subscribe to Just So You Know wherever you get your podcasts and look for our new episodes every Thursday. Just So You Know is a PETA production.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Yahoo Fantasy Football Forecast.
It seems like you know ball the way you talk, so.
Thank you. Someone clip that.
I'm not playing in your league unless I can draft myself.
Outside of football, I live a pretty boring life.
With Matt Harmon.
This is an anti-getting greedy podcast.
You can get on a podcast. You can get online. You can argue with the clouds. You can argue with the Russian bots. Don't care.
It's Thursday, May 4th. May the 4th be with you. All of you who celebrate and observe. Joining me on the pod for this very special episode is someone that I always celebrate and somebody we got out of his back to tank just in time after being a little bit under the weather, playing hurt this week. It's Scott Pianowski, the one and only. Scott, what's going on, buddy?
Not much, man. It is May 4th. It's my older brother's birthday, and I'm just glad that somebody in my family had to have their birthday sullied by all this May the 4th business, it's him and not me. But we've already had our Star Wars episode that is come and gone. You'll have to go. That's an Easter egg in a past episode. Today, we're talking NFL only. No movies, no TV themes, no cartoon characters. We're just talking straight NFL, baby.
Well, I'll still take the over on movie references from you on 0.5. I'll take the over on 0.5 movie references at some point during the pod. But Scott, this is a pretty highly anticipated episode, at least on my end. I've been looking forward to doing this. I said to Scott that, you know, he publishes, you just call them the fantasy team rankings, right? Or fantasy team power rankings. But what do you call this thing?
Yeah, it's team power rankings. We haven't come up with a nice, tidy packaging for it. But yeah, it's basically the rank from 32 to 1 of how exciting, how juicy, how fun every team is, how excited you'll be to draft them, how sad you'll be when they have their bye week. The idea is if they're 32, they could leave the NFL and nobody cares. If they're one, it's like, oh my God, their bye week is going to be a national disaster.
Love it. Yeah, no. And this is a natural post-draft episode to check in on these. And Scott updates them once a quarter during the regular season.
Yeah, I'll probably do at least one or two episodes during the summer, at least one. And then, yeah, quarterly we check in. And that's always fun because you see a team's ranking. It's like, oh, they're fifth. And they're like, they were 19th a month ago. What happened? You know, but yeah, that's the NFL. As you know, the NFL ages like dog years, right? I mean, I was just doing some writing about Kyler Murray. The Arizona Cardinals were the last team to lose in the NFL in 2021. They started off 7-0.
Man.
And you know, since then, you know, Murray's fallen on hard times. Cliff Kingsbury has been fired. And they do not come out well. You know, Cliff, at one point, Kyler Murray was like on the short list of MVP candidates not that long ago. And now they're like a team I don't want to draft anybody on their roster. So the NFL changes so quick, more than any other sport. Every sport has turnover, but the NFL is all about turnover and attrition and just radically changing things. And plus, unlike the other sports, the draft is just, it just refortifies the league, and we have to recalibrate how we feel about everybody. As we know, the quarterback is a connective tissue in every city. Every year, it feels like there's a rich quarterback class that we have to have opinions on, who's going to play right away, who's going to be good right away, and all that stuff. So the bottom line is this. The NFL reshuffles. It's a snow globe league more than any other sports league I can think about. It's just, it's its own entity.
Scotty, you need like You need a t-shirt with this. It's a snow globe league thing, you know, or maybe your own line of snow globes, pal. You've got merch potential here with this whole thing. I love it. No, so we're going to dive into these. We'll definitely update them again, maybe into training camp or right before week one. And then we'll find a way somehow during our busy in-season schedule to make this a part of the podcast, because I think it's a great thing that Scott does. And we get to touch on every team, which I absolutely love. So again, no real news for us to get into. So let's jump right into this. Again, this is what rosters look like today. As we're heading into training, you know, off-season stuff, then training camp's going to come around. I don't think things are going to shake up too much. Like once we get out of the draft, we basically know what these rosters are going to look like. And again, the most appealing offenses for fantasy football, the best ecosystems, that's my word, right? The best infrastructures. So let's jump right into it. And Scott, I broke your rankings up 32-1 into three different groups so that we can kind of not sit here and go 10 minutes on the bottom of 32 teams and or the bottom team and be like, oh my god, we got to make up so much time here. So the bottom tier, I think this is offenses that look like a mess, or they've got some complete unknowns, everything like that. Maybe one reliable fantasy starter, if at all, here. We've got number 32, Carolina Panthers, 31, New England Patriots, 30, Arizona Cardinals, 29, the Houston Texans, 28, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, 27, the Tennessee Titans, 26, Washington Commanders, 25, Green Bay Packers, the 24 ranked LA Rams, and then last one in this group, number 23, the Denver Broncos. I think the theme of this group, Scott, is quarterback questions. I do want to take you all the way to the bottom ranked team here, the Carolina Panthers. Obviously, they took Bryce Young, number one overall in the draft. But I definitely understand some of your skepticism, well, at least with the wide receiver core. But talk to me about Carolina and why they felt at the very bottom of your rankings here.
Yeah, there's one player who will be taken in the top 100 in fantasy drafts, and that's Miles Sanders. And we know how risky it can be to not just pay a running back on a second contract, but to trust those guys in fantasy. When you're betting on a running back, you're betting on the success of the offense, the success of the team. Are they going to win games? Are they going to be salting LA leads late? And we can't say that about Miles Sanders. I mean, look, Miles Sanders got paid, and good for him, but man, he is not in Philadelphia anymore. And I mean, he had the biggest fall. I mean, a little teaser. Philadelphia is ranked very highly on this list, as you might expect. And by the way, this just got published as we're starting this podcast Thursday afternoon. So all my rationale, I don't go into every player, but I write about a paragraph on every team. You know, sometimes it's just a couple of sentences. Sometimes it's a little bit longer. So if you want the War and Peace version of it, it's on the website for your perusal as we speak. But why does Carolina rank last? And look, I want Bryce Young to be a great player. I think he could be. Obviously, he's not going to get any bigger. Bryce Young would be the first guy to tell you that. But they're not giving him a lot of help. Look at this wide receiver room, right? I mean, just a bunch of guys who are past their high point of relevance in the NFL, a running back on a second contract. I think Carolina, I know the defense, they've drafted a pretty interesting defense over the last few years, and it started to mature. They were a plucky team in the second half of last year. But I still see a team that's probably going to win five games and only one player who will be drafted. And when I say top 100, Miles Sanders might go in the fifth or sixth round of fantasy drafts. It's not like he's any kind of a destination player. They were an easy rank for me at the bottom of this list.
Yeah, I just wrote a piece that's publishing on Friday for the website, like kind of what the impact of these rookie quarterbacks are going to be on each individual offense, the top four guys drafted. So the Panthers are very fresh on the mind. Scott, the Panthers are always a little too fresh on the mind for me. So I think that you're totally right on this. The receiver room is like, you kind of have to squint at it to see a lot of good stuff. I'm a big Jonathan Mingo fan. People have heard me talk about that on the podcast a lot, but he's still a rookie receiver. Like Adam Thielen, DJ Chark, You're right. They're well past their best years in the NFL. One guy has aged out. Another guy's dealt with a lot of injuries. And Chark, I think there's a non-0% chance that like Terrace Marshall, if he has a great offseason, and Terrace Marshall has not been good in the NFL. So I'm not saying this is any excitement of Terrace Marshall. Just like, I think there's a chance he could beat out a guy like DJ Chark in training camp. So I get that. Hayden Hurst is a guy who his two career high seasons are 68 and 88 targets. You know, he's an under 10 yards per catch guy. I don't know where you're going to rank him at tight ends at this point. It's a rookie quarterback, so that's always problematic no matter how good you feel about Bryce Young. I do like Miles Sanders as a fantasy pick just because the line is good, the offensive coaching staff is good, and the defense should probably be solid. But I agree with you overall on this ranking that they've got to be down towards the bottom. Next team I want to pick your brain on is the Arizona Cardinals because you mentioned them. Like, I think if you look at all of these teams here, Arizona might have the most, maybe other than probably the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, but obviously we know that Tom Brady's out of there. Arizona might have the most guys that have helped you recently in fantasy on this list, whether it's James Conner, it's Zach Ertz, it's Marquise Brown, it's DeAndre Hopkins. For now, Hopkins is still on this roster. You know, those four guys, at least, like, again, last year, not for the entire season, but they were good, at least in fantasy. But is it just the specter of like Colt McCoy that has you ranking them here at 30?
I mean, this was an all-star team 2 or 3 years ago, right? I mean, Hopkins is a borderline Hall of Famer. Marquise Brown has certainly had his moments, although it's kind of hard to believe he went in the first round. Him and N'Keal Harry went in the first round of that 2019 draft, and they've been usurped by everybody who went after them, it feels like. But yeah. They have to rebuild Murray's confidence, and we'll see when Murray can come back. Obviously, he had that non-contact ACL injury, which is frightening whenever you see that. But you know, one thing that made me not trust Arizona is they hire a defensive-minded head coach. Nothing wrong with that. But the offense coordinator they hired comes from the Cleveland Browns system, Kevin Stefanski coaching tree. It's like, what did the Cleveland Browns do over the last 3 years that you'd want to tap into their coaching staff and say, oh, there's the guy to rebuild our offense. Here's the guy who could rebuild Kyler Murray's confidence. And yeah, I don't mean, that's not fair to judge somebody like that, but there's certain coaches who get hired who are offensive minds. Like, oh yeah, you know, what's on the resume? They built an offense full of Pro Bowlers. They built a top five offense or something. You know, the Colts look at Shane Steichen and it's like, oh yeah, he was successful with the Chargers. He's successful with the Eagles. He's worked for all these guys who we're excited about. I just don't know what you're pitching with Arizona right now. A lot of guys who were good 2, 3, 4 years ago. And then the NFL, man, that's when you're trying to find recapture glory days. You know, James Conner, I feel like, is really close to aging out of the league. I don't know if Hopkins will be on the opening day roster. I know Murray and Brown obviously played in college, and people were excited about that last year, and injuries kind of got in the way. Maybe they can rekindle something. But is Marquise Hollywood Brown really a number one? Zach Ertz, obviously, in an age pocket that we worry about for tight ends. Look, I guess if they can rebuild Kyler Murray's confidence, I mean, we're talking about somebody who was the first overall pick of his class, who looked like he was on the target for superstardom. He gets the big contract last year, which was controversial for a couple of different reasons. But if they can fix Murray, that's fine. It's just who on this offense do you want to draft? That's the bottom line. I thought to myself, well, I'm not drafting Zach Ertz now, and I'm not drafting Brown now, and Hopkins isn't going to be here, and Connor's at that. Connor has crossed that line where you're just afraid to draft a running back at his career arc. And so at first it felt weird to have Arizona this low. And I'm like, oh, yeah, of course, Arizona's 31st. They may be 32nd a month into the season.
Yeah, right. Totally. Again, who's going to start for this team at quarterback the most of the games? Is it going to be Colt McCoy? Is it going to be the rookie? What's his name? Toon? I forget his first name. But like, you know, it's troubling for sure. Clayton.
Are you Clayton concerned Toon, that Murray's going to miss a major chunk of the season? Maybe I'm late to some news or something. Okay.
I am, just for a couple of reasons. One, he tore his ACL late in the season. By the way, his most powerful tool, he does have a great arm. I think Kyler Murray can spray the thing all over the field, but he is obviously the best thing he does is as a rusher. I'm concerned he misses games into October. And then really, like, if you're the Arizona Cardinals, Scott, and you are as bad as clearly your ranking thinks offensively, and I think they're right now, they're the betting favorite to pick first overall. And I know the betting favorite thing I've slammed on this podcast from a draft perspective, but there's a reason that Arizona is not favored to be a very good team next year. If you're Arizona and you're like midway through November, Kyler Murray hasn't played for you, you are like, you know, jet setting towards the number one overall pick. You also have Houston's first round pick next year. We'll see how good they are. I think there's a chance they get into November. We haven't seen Kyler Murray yet. And, you know, like, this is a staff that was not involved in drafting Kyler Murray. They might just be like, hey, we're not even going to play you this year. Get fully healthy. We'll trade you somewhere else next year, and we'll take a new quarterback first overall. I think that's very much in the range of outcomes.
So Caleb Williams could be the quarterback for the Arizona Cardinals next year, in the following year.
Very, very possible, which would be an incredible amount of, just from 2018 to 2024, you took three quarterbacks in the first round. Two came at the first overall pick. It's just not that anybody should feel bad for Josh Rosen, what happened to him. You know, it is what it is. And that's just the reality of like a new, like, constant regime turnover, you know, denting these quarterback developments and obviously injuries. I mentioned Houston Texans. Why do you have more confidence in the Houston Texans than the Carolina Panthers Because I think if you look at it, Scott, it's pretty similar, right? There's a questionable receiving core. There's a running back that we probably, although, you know, I think Damian Pierce probably a little bit more exciting than Miles Sanders. It's a rookie quarterback. It's a new coaching staff. So, I mean, it's a three damn spot difference. But what is the difference here from 29 Houston Texans, 32 Carolina?
Yeah, the margins are slim, but I just see a better floor for C.J. Stroud. I'd be really surprised if C.J. Stroud just didn't make it in the NFL. And so that means something to me. I think he might be more ready to play as a rookie. And their skill talent, I realize, like Robert Woods, I mean, we're past really thinking about him for fantasy. But the other skill talent here is young, and it's on the escalator. You know, it's on the up escalator, not the down escalator. We're not talking about guys like Chark and Thielen. We're talking about guys like Mechie and guys like Collins and, you know, guys like Damian Pierce, who their best seasons may be ahead of them. So it's a bet on the aging curve is I guess the way I'd go with that. Also, because I think Stroud has a higher floor than Young has. So those are the two things that give Carolina. Look, I ranked them 29th. It's not like I'm pounding the table for Houston Texans at your draft, but that's a clear edge to me.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Hey, Scott, this is the year for Nico Collins, by the way, right? Like, this is fine. We said it last year.
I've been chasing it. I've been doubling down and doubling down, and so far just pretty much losing, right? I mean, the problem with Collins is he was good enough to roster, but never really good enough to trust last year. Even in best ball, if you played him, you probably only got 3 or 4 usable weeks. I don't know. I still think there's something there, and maybe this new coaching staff and new quarterback can tap into it. He's not built to be a number one, but he's a field stretcher. Yeah. He can be a splash play guy. I'm just hoping he can have one of those, like, you know, 65, you know, 9, 10, and 7 type of seasons. I'm not asking for the world here.
I think that the next couple teams here, Tampa Bay, Tennessee, we understand what the problem is there. Tampa Bay, it's quarterbacks. Tennessee, there's one guy. Derrick Henry. And then, I mean, just that wide receiver core is pretty ghastly, especially if Treylon Burks doesn't, like, take another step. I think Chig Okonkwo could be interesting there. At tight end, but I think we know what the deal is there. Washington, we know what the deal is. It's quarterback, it's Jacoby Brissett and Sam Howell. These next three teams, Green Bay, LA, Denver, there's a lot of names here. I think Green Bay, is it basically just at 25 here? You know, I think Jordan loves the big question, but you also look at the rest of this roster. It's incredibly, incredibly young. Really, Aaron Jones is the only guy who's given us like a full season's worth of something we know at the NFL level.
Yeah, we hope what Christian Watson did in the second half is the real thing. And it's just nice to have some optimism for Jordan Love. A year ago, we were concerned he couldn't play. And finally, the Rodgers drama is out of our lives. Green Bay's just been so spoiled, right? I mean, for 4 decades, yeah, they had Favre and Rodgers, and that's the quarterback royalty. No team. There have been teams who have stacked quarterbacks back-to-back. I mean, Montana and Young played back-to-back, but they didn't play as long as, you know, Favre played forever in Green Bay and, you know, never missed a game famously. And then Rodgers had such a long run. And of course, now they both go to the Jets, which is just kind of funny how that worked out. And it didn't seem like that story played out like over 18 months. Thank God between Lamar Jackson's contract holdout and, oh no, he's available, he can go cut his deal around the league. It was, you know, that was just a big sham and everything. Finally, they just let us up for air and said, okay, Lamar, you get paid. Rodgers, you went to the one team that wants you. Everybody happy now? Good. Jordan Love could start his career now. Good. I'm intrigued by what I saw from Watson. I think he's the real deal. And I've always liked both of these running backs, even though they cannibalize each other for fantasy. The problem is we don't know for sure that Love is good. And the depth of the roster is really kind of skimpy. So it's just the Packers have been such a name brand for fans. They weren't last year. Rodgers had a bad season. And you took either a mild loss on the running backs, I guess, and the receivers. Watson's a guy who somebody else probably drafted and cut. And then the person who picked him up in the second half benefited from him, and he was a difference maker in the second half. I wouldn't say a league winner, but certainly somebody could play with confidence. But it's just nice to have some optimism that maybe Jordan Love can play, because he was a controversial first-round pick. He barely got on the field for most of his time in Green Bay. Last year, we got a whiff of what he could do, and finally something positive, because there was nothing positive on the Jordan Love tape until last year. I don't know that he's any good, but at least I can tell myself a story that he might be good. And that's enough for now.
These next two teams here, the LA Rams, the Denver Broncos, anything on these two teams? I'll say this, Scott, the LA Rams, you know, you look at them and it's obviously Cooper Kupp, who I think will definitely still be a first round pick in fantasy. Then there's really not much else to get excited about. Cam Akers had a couple moments. If you look at the Rams offensive roster and you think it's bad, take a look at their defensive roster. Scott, I'm gonna read off some names here from their defense, like starting defensive players on the LA Rams. And I want you to tell me if you've heard of any of these guys. And I swear to God, I'm not making any of these names up. Kobe Durant, Russ Yeast, Robert Rochelle, Christian Roseboom, Jonah Williams, not the tackle from the Bengals. Have you heard of any of these players? You know anything about any of these guys?
I have nothing to offer in any of those guys. You could be making up names as far as I'm concerned.
Russ Yeast. I mean, look, no disrespect to these guys, but like I'm mainline NFL all day. That's my 365 days. That's my job. I don't know who these dudes are. It's pretty ghastly. But
yeah, the Bengals used to have a receiver named Craig Yeast. He was like their fourth or fifth receiver, maybe a punt returner. So that's as far as I go with Yeast. I eat too much bread. That's basically all I have.
I got to cut out yeast. The Rams got yeast starting at safety. Scott and I are worried about yeast intake. So it's tough. It's tough out here for all of us.
Well, the Rams, look, they pushed all their chips in and said, we're going to try to win a championship. And we don't care what happens after that. They won a championship. That banner will hang forever. This isn't the NCAA. They can't have it stripped from them. So great. You know, Sean McVay gets his second Super Bowl trip. He gets his first championship. Great moment for Matthew Stafford. Then everything went wrong last year. Stafford was hurt to begin the season. Then he really got hurt. The offensive line wasn't good. Kupp went down halfway through the season. The Allen Robinson project was a total disaster. I'm still trying to figure out why the team that drafts receivers better than everybody else decided to kick the tires on Allen Robinson. I don't think that really makes any sense. But that's neither here nor there. I was toying with putting the Rams a lot lower. The thing is, if Kupp is healthy, between McVay's schemes and Kupp's ability to win all over the field and the shape of this offense, he's just set up to be a target hog. And he'll get those layup targets, as you talk about. So he'll be a first-round pick. But you have to tell yourself, okay, I'm going to take a player off a major injury. Kupp was into an age 30 season, I want to say. So you were getting kind of late in his career. If you draft Cam Akers, you're believing in what we saw maybe the final quarter of the season when he went, you know, he had a really big game. I think it was on Christmas Day, I want to say. He was a factor the final month of the year. That was basically it. And then the third player you'll draft on this roster is Tyler Higbee, which is kind of admitting that you've given up a tight end, right? I've stopped. Yeah, I know. He had that. Talk about Decembers to remember. He had one like 3 or 4 years ago, and it was just a false positive. And he really hasn't done anything that matches that the rest of his career. So I don't know who they're getting with Stafford in his mid-30s. And I wonder how much longer he wants to even play, right? I mean, he'll try to play this year, but he's won his championship. He's got a life. He wants to have a quality of life outside the NFL. At some point, maybe it's just not worth it taking all the hits and everything. I mean, I know Andrew Luck got out a lot earlier than Stafford did. I would not be surprised if this is Stafford's last season. And remember, we weren't even sure if McVay was going to come back. He decided he wanted to, but I don't know that he's in it for the long term. Not that I hold it against him. Again, they won a championship. The goal was to win a championship. Now all those taxes are coming due.
Yeah, by the way, you know, if you draft Cooper Kupp and 3 weeks into the season, Stetson Bennett is starting for the LA Rams because he's currently listed as their backup quarterback, you can't be surprised about that. All right, before we move out of this, the doldrum tier here, Scott, give me one team. Let's both give one team that we think could jump out of this group here.
I can't believe I'm going to say this, but if Sean Payton can fix Russell Wilson, we have to reevaluate what the Broncos are now. Again, I talked about Bryce Young isn't going to get any taller. Guess what? Russell Wilson isn't going to get any taller. And we saw last year.
Or younger.
And we saw what Russell Wilson, you know, with his athleticism, not where it was in his peak years in Seattle. It's a guy who has trouble seeing in the pocket, who got away with a lot of stuff because he could just make up Russell Wilson stuff. He always took a lot of sacks. That was always the price of doing business with Russell Wilson. But last year, and maybe he was playing hurt. It's just so funny, right? Their over-under win total was 10.5. They were put on 5 primetime games. I tried all season to unsubscribe from the Russell Wilson Denver Broncos package. I couldn't figure it out. They kept giving them to me in these standalone games. It was really frustrating. To be fair, I thought they were going to be a good team. I gave up on that like everybody did early in the season. But Sean Payton, every great offensive mind has an arrogance to him. And Sean Payton looked at this team, said, you know, it's like in – okay, here's your movie reference, right? They crashed the car in Fast Times at Ridgemont High. The car is totaled.
Boom. The overhits.
and Spicoli says, you know, I can fix the car. My dad's a TV repairman. He's got this ultimate set of tools. And his buddy says, you can't fix this car, Spicoli. The car is obviously totaled. And Spicoli examines it up close. It's smoking. It's bashed to hell. He goes, I can fix it. And that's Sean Payton right now. He's looking at the smashed car in Ridgemont High and saying, I can fix it. Russell Wilson, I can fix it. He's got his dad has the TV, is the TV repairman, has the ultimate set of tools. I ask you, Matt Harmon, can Sean Payton fix Russell Wilson?
Maybe. By the way, it's pretty funny too to continue your analogy there, that if this Denver Broncos offense is a car, you know, with smoke coming out of it, the one thing I think the public, I wouldn't agree with this, the one thing the public might have hung their hat on was like, oh, well, the wide receiver room is good. Tim Patrick's coming back. They pick up the 5th-year option on Jerry Jeudy. Cortland Sutton, people still think he's pretty good. The tires on this car are they've been updated just like 3 months ago. Sean Payton looks at the wide receiver room and says, you know what, I'm going to trade up for Marvin Mims in the first with my first pick here in the NFL draft. So they're like, oh, yeah, let's just get new tires, even though the car is smoking. I don't know. My confidence level is not high in Sean Payton fixing Russell Wilson, because also, Scott, I think that if Russell Wilson doesn't get fixed, I think Sean Payton like has plenty of plausible deniability to be like, sorry, he's too far gone, and like, I'm the king of the town here now at this point.
I inherited this. I did not choose this.
So like, hey, you know what, if we can't fix the car, we'll send it to the dumpster, and then we'll just we'll get a new car here. And I think that's probably how this is going to go.
Totally fair. Again, I inherited this. I didn't choose this. So I get my own guy, I get my own quarterback, I get my own, you know, he'll get two chances, right? He'll get one chance to fix Wilson, and if that doesn't work, he'll get a chance to make his own guy work. And then after that, you know, he'll get paid for the rest of his contract. He'll go back to being an announcer. But it's just cool to have Sean Payton back in the league. There aren't enough people who know how to scheme offense. And again, even if this fails miserably, the NFL is just more interesting with Sean Payton in it. And God knows nobody enjoyed that Denver coaching staff last year. So I'm not saying you asked who could graduate from this list, and I'm not saying it with any confidence. This is the bottom third for a reason. There's a lot of these teams. What I'm going to say, Mac Jones is going to have a breakout year. That's not going to happen. In fact, there's really no reason to talk about the Patriots. That's our one Patriot moment, other than my obligatory N'Keal Harry reference, which I shoehorned in earlier. But maybe if one of the rookie quarterbacks is really ready to play, if Stroud just hits the ground running and it has like a Cam Newton rookie year or something like that, which I wouldn't bet on it, but it's a non-zero chance, then maybe maybe Houston takes a big leap or so, or maybe I've undersold Young's ability to be NFL ready. I mean the guy did was make plays at Alabama, and I get it. At Alabama, you have great coaching, great infrastructure, but you also play a murderous schedule. So if you do it at Alabama, you just no easy games for them.
My nomination from this group, Scott, you know me, it's the Washington Commanders.
Oh, sure.
Because look, they've got the skill position talent. They've got Terry McLaurin, who I think is an elite wide receiver. We just, you know, the stats don't show it because he's played with miserable quarterbacks. Jahan Dotson is so underrated. I said this on Twitter the other day. Like, I went and looked through 3 or 4 sets of dynasty rankings, and I'm like, why is Jahan Dotson so low here after what he showed as a rookie? Why is he behind guys who, you know, I'm not going to name any names. People want me to name. Actually, you know what? I'll name names of the podcast. I didn't do it on Twitter, but why is he behind Christian Watson? Why is he behind Treylon Burks still? Why is he behind George Pickens? Like, Jahan Dotson is a better football player than all three of those guys. I love Jahan Dotson. Curtis Samuel's still on the roster. You know, I'm a big Curtis Samuel guy. Brian Robinson showed pretty well as a rookie. I like the Eric Bieniemy hire. Obviously, nothing like Washington's about to get new ownership, so that should be just a breath of fresh air throughout the building. And look, Jacoby Brissett was good last year for the Browns. I'll say it. He was good last year for the Browns. I know that, you know, he's in a camp competition with Sam Howell. I think Jacoby Brissett's probably going to start for this team based on, you know, getting like an up to $10 million contract. There it is, up to drink. I don't know. I think that Washington has a chance if Brissett is the player he was last year for Cleveland, in a slightly better infrastructure ecosystem there with the Browns. I think they could jump into, you know, being like maybe the 15th, 16th ranked team here.
Yeah, that's probably a better answer than what I gave. I like the Washington choice too. I talked about with San Francisco, them being a steakhouse team where it's like, you know, the ambiance is great and the appetizers are great and the salads are great and the drinks are great. Is the steak any good? I don't know.
Yeah.
Well, that's where I am with Washington. I love their very, you know, true. I'm a huge Terry McLaurin fan, huge Brian Robinson fan. Dotson, as you said, had an extremely underappreciated rookie year, and I don't know if I agree with all your evaluations of how you put him against some of the other first-year receivers. I would certainly have him ahead of Burks. But is Dotson underrated right now as a commodity in the dynasty market? I think absolutely. We don't know if Sam Howell's any good. Obviously, he's 6'1". He's not getting any bigger. He had a kind of a checkered career at North Carolina. He's one of those guys. It's always weird. We like – it's always easier for analysis when players have linear careers where they start out at a level, they get a little bit better, they get a little bit better. Howell's a guy who got a little bit worse his final year at North Carolina, and it pushed him back to the 5th round. we haven't seen him play a lot at the NFL. If he's good, I mean, who knows? There's a chance, a puncher's chance, right? That maybe he's something. And I know Washington's just starving. They've tried to make Carson Wentz work, and they tried to make Taylor Heinicke work. ODU's finest, as you like to say.
Shout out!
But it's a steakhouse team, man. It's a steakhouse team. I love the menu. I just don't know if the New York Strip is any good. If the New York Strip's good, this team will be good. And as you said, man, it's just so great. You know, they finally got the nickname sorted out. They're finally getting probably the worst owner we've ever seen in our lifetimes in sports. He's finally getting pushed out, and we're going to have just a fresh start for this team. It's a great fan base. It's an area that so badly wants to have a team that's relevant. If they end up being like a playoff contender, or, you know, like a winning team, a team that challenges the Eagles, which may be a stretch, but there's a lot of talent here. As you said, the offense has all sorts. Terry McLaurin's a guy I've overdrafted every year. I think this is the first year I'm not going to do it, which means he'll probably have like a 13 touchdown season. I've been just chasing what Terry McLaurin can do. At the end of the year, I'm giving him the it's not your fault hug from Good Will Hunting movie reference two of the Overcashes.
Boom.
I'd love to see Sam Howell be the real thing. I don't know if that's a realistic bet, but it's a possible bet.
Yeah, I'm a dummy, but this is probably the best I've felt about Terry McLaurin, just because Jacoby Brissett has proven it in the NFL at least last year. And Scott, I love the steakhouse analogy, because there is nothing more disappointing than when you go to a quote steakhouse and you get a disappointing steak, especially like as a snobby home cook. I'm like, I could have made this ribeye better myself. So, and that's basically the feeling of drafting Terry McLaurin every year. It's like, God, man, the desserts or the appetizers are good. The drinks are good. They got a great wine selection, and this ribeye, you know, sucks.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
Okay, let's move into the middle tier here. These are teams with potentially high ceilings, maybe low floors. You could basically just call this the variance tier, I think. I could see a lot of these teams going either way. 22, you've got the New York Giants. 21, you've got the New Orleans Saints. 20, you've got the Atlanta Falcons, going to come back to that. 19, the Las Vegas Raiders. 18, Indianapolis Colts. 17, Pittsburgh Steelers. 16, the Cleveland Browns. 15, the Chicago Bears, 14, the New York Jets, and 13, the Detroit Lions. I mentioned Atlanta. I mean, obviously, we sort of kind of don't know who Desmond Ridder is, Scott, but you know, I'm the biggest Arthur Smith defender on planet Earth. Not that I'm trying to get a beer with the guy, but I do love the way he designs offenses. So I think that if Desmond Ridder is competent, Atlanta could really outkick your 20th ranking here. I could see them being a top 10 team, especially, Scott, because we love a concentrated usage tree, you and I, and this team could pretty much be Kyle Pitts, Drake London, Bijan Robinson, and log out after that.
Yeah, talk about ascending talents, right? Pitts year three, London year two, Robinson, as much as we've all devalued the running back and everything, I think we saw, I don't agree with what Detroit did with Gibbs, and why would you spend the 12th overall pick on a running back who's always going to need a caddy? I'm fine with what Atlanta did with Robinson. The bet on the Falcons, where you come down on the Falcons probably means how you come down on Ridder, or to some degree how you come down on Arthur Smith. And I've just been so frustrated by Smith. We've seen Pitts be a disappointment for two straight years. Not that he's been a bad player, but I mean, the first year he only scores a touchdown in London. He never gets a touchdown in American soil. It just feels like there's just been so much left on the table with him through 2 years. And some of that has to come back to the coach. But then again, they haven't had the right quarterback. Then again, is Ridder the right quarterback? End of the story. Bottom line here. Every team would love to have their top three skill guys. And even the players supporting them aren't bad, right? I mean, Algier had moments last year. We know Cordarrelle Patterson. I always thought Cordarrelle Patterson was more interesting when they made him kind of gadgety. And then last year when they made him more of a traditional player, I thought they lost a lot of the juice from Patterson, which I thought was a mistake from Arthur Smith. But at the end of the day, I wish Ridder had just showed me something that I could just take and blow up and imagine greatness from. And I don't feel like I saw that bubble last year. And maybe in some of your review, you saw some things for Ridder that I didn't see. He's so early in his career that we can't render any definitive judgment on him. But I'm just afraid that his limitations are going to shackle the upside of everybody on this team.
I think that's totally fair. The only thing I would say that I saw from Ritter in the last four games was just competency, you know, that like, and the bar was so low. I've dogged Mariota a lot on the podcast. I mean, he was just, he was really, really dreadful and left so much on the table. But then why did it take so long to go to Desmond Ritter? You know, and again, when Ritter got in there, it's just like Drake London started producing. I don't think that's a coincidence. You know, we never got to see Ritter with Kyle Pitts. So that's sort of like, if Kyle Pitts was there for the last 4 weeks, who's to say he wouldn't have finished the season really strong, but he was obviously on IR by then. So I don't know. I totally understand the hesitations. Ritter's not a proven guy, but I also think like, you know, and we've seen Arthur Smith's offenses with Matt Ryan. They threw the ball a lot more than they did with Marcus Mariota. With Ryan Tannehill, they even threw the ball a lot more. So I think this offense can be much more fantasy friendly than people think. Who's another team in this group that really, you know, you kind of gravitate to?
Well, I mean, I'll say this. The Falcons are certainly interesting because they have those three guys that jump out at you. But I'm curious to see what Pittsburgh can do. I know Kenny Pickett was, I don't know. I wish he did more. And we're wondering how much did Jordan Addison pump him up his final year at Pitt. But I'm a Pickens guy. I'm probably more of a Pickens guy than you. I like the overall depth of that receiver group. I think Freiermuth is a really interesting tight end. And even though it's not maybe the strongest running game, it's not like they have total zeros in the backfield either. I had Pittsburgh at 17. I think some people might think that's a little bit high, but some of the teams that they're above, I mean, the Giants, Dable did an unbelievable job with Daniel Jones, but why didn't they significantly upgrade their receiver room? New Orleans, after Chris Olave, who can you really draft into proactively? I'm just so many arrows pointing the wrong way with Alvin Kamara. Derek Carr really has no major upside. There's two draftable guys in Las Vegas probably, and then there's a major, major gap. Pittsburgh's interesting to me, and Indianapolis is interesting to me. Steichen's a great hire, a guy I totally believe in. They take the wild card of the draft in Anthony Richardson. Jonathan Taylor is somebody I'm willing to bet on. Again, I'm just going to go to the grave believing Michael Pittman. He's become a little bit of a McLaurin for me. I'm always going to defend Pittman and blame everybody around him.
You and me both, buddy. You spent too much time with me, man. I mean,
That's definitely a shared trait with you and I at this point, but the Colts are fascinating to me and the Steelers are fascinating to me. And again, I don't know why the Steelers brought in Allen Robinson. I didn't think they needed to. They have young talent in that room. Why play somebody who's already had the best of his career already come and go, and now he's in his age 30 season? Although it feels like Robinson's even older than that. But maybe the Colts. I don't know when Richardson will play. And also, you know, I'm a Gardner Minshew apologist. So if Richardson's not ready, that means Gardner Minshew's playing. And he's obviously got the background with his head coach also. I just think the Colts got the coach right. I know that Irsay's just a crazy owner and he's always saying goofy things. And it's just, you always worry that he's going to maybe steer the ship in the wrong direction. Chris Ballard, he's an interesting GM, right? 3 or 4 years ago, people were willing to follow that guy into a burning building. And in the last couple of years, people have been like, hey, wait a minute, you've had some really bad drafts. This team has a lot of red ink on it and a lot of it's on you. We're going to find out about Chris Ballard. We're going to find out about Shane Steichen, but I think they have the right people in charge. I don't know with Richardson. I know he's a high upside. I know he's a very wide range of outcomes, but I'll bet on Jonathan Taylor and Michael Pittman anytime.
Yeah, if I had to take a team that I think could kick itself into the top 10 out of this group, I think it could be the Indianapolis Colts because, number one, if Richardson's on the field, he's going to be a fantasy starter. I know that people like... I think I saw somebody say like the Trey Lance bros have just rebranded themselves as Anthony Richardson bros, which I get the sentiment there. It didn't work out with Trey Lance. People were obsessed with the rushing upside. I think Anthony Richardson is a little bit of a different animal from like a ceiling perspective than Trey Lance. So look, when he gets on the field, he's going to be a fantasy factor. Jonathan Taylor, I think he's north of five yards per carry player is in his entire career. What could he do with a mobile quarterback next to him? Get the excitement there. And I think this receiver room, Scott, is criminally underrated. Like you mentioned, Michael Pittman. I love Josh Downs, the slot receiver they drafted. I think he could be the second biggest target getter on this team. And I like Alec Pierce as a role player, like a guy that's a big X receiver who's going to stretch the field, win jump balls, win some slants, stuff like that. Limited application player, but can be a nice third receiver for them. And Scott, if we're like, I know it didn't work out with Mo Alie-Cox, VCU's finest. We can just transfer over to UVA's finest, Jelani Woods, in terms of our size, athleticism obsessed tight end for the Indianapolis Colts. This is a lot of potential for them to be a high end offense. So I like that call. But I want to double back to the Steelers because I think the Steelers are really interesting too. And you know, I hate the Matt Canada offense. Like, if I'm talking about where am I ranking offensive coordinators and the way they have designed things so far, Matt Canada is probably in the bottom five of these rankings here. However, the offense sort of kind of caught fire late in the year. I can understand the justification that you want to keep Matt Canada around because you don't want to change systems on Kenny Pickett. I'm not totally sure where I stand on Pickett's ceiling. I think he could maybe be the 20th best quarterback in the NFL this year, but I could also see him get stuck at that 20th best quarterback in the NFL. But there's no doubt that from an improvisational standpoint, on the move standpoint, we saw him get better last year. Deontay Johnson is a screaming, you know, positive touchdown regression candidate. I like that a lot. I am a little skeptical on George Pickens having the ceiling that everybody else thinks he can have, but he could definitely at least be like a Devontae Parker style X receiver. They draft a first round left tackle. They draft a tight end who literally in his Instagram bio says sixth offensive tackle, you know, in Darnell Washington out of Georgia. That could be big news for Najee Harris. And look, am I saying Allen Robinson is going to have a career revival in Pittsburgh? No, I'm not going to say that, but I think he could be in a bit better role with the Pittsburgh Steelers as their big slot receiver than he was with the Los Angeles Rams last year. So I like your call with I know people will think Pittsburgh 17 is too high. Their best receiver, Deontay Johnson, didn't score a damn touchdown last year, but I like it here at 17.
Yeah, Deontay Johnson set the record for most targets without a touchdown. He blew that record out of the water. It'd be hard for somebody to beat it. You know, with Pickett, I like that the moment wasn't too big for him. I mean, he seemed to have really good poise and just like he belonged in the NFL. And he made some stick throws late in the season as they stole a couple of games. And Mike Tomlin, I can't see Mike Tomlin having a team that underachieves 2 years in a row, although they did play well at the end of last year. And there's probably some listeners right now who are pounding their dashboards in their car and saying, well, what about the Jets? What about the Jets? Well, yeah. To be honest, if I had broken up the thirds of this list, I might have put the Jets in the first tier, albeit at the bottom of that tier. So that's why I didn't mention the Jets. It's hard to know what they're getting from Aaron Rodgers, but maybe he did the Tom Brady get out of New England when the situation's not tenable for me anymore and get to a team that can support me. I'm not saying that necessarily the Jets are the setup that Tom Brady had when he first got into Tampa Bay. And by the way, Tom Brady knew when to leave Tampa Bay as well, because that team looks totally broken right now. Mike Evans won 11 games with a touchdown last year. Hard to believe that could happen. But if Breece Hall is healthy, if Garrett Wilson is healthy, man, those guys, do you think of a team that drafted as much talent in 1 year as the Jets? They have the offensive and defensive rookies of the year, and they have Breece Hall, who probably would have been in that conversation had he stayed healthy all season. They get all those guys in one draft. Obviously, they made out like bandits with the Adams trade. Big believer in the team they built. I just don't know what they're getting from Rodgers, but maybe Rodgers is getting out at the right time. Maybe he'll win the breakup the way Brady won the breakup with the Patriots.
I think it's smart to have the Jets at 14, especially – like, I think they could end up being, from an efficiency standpoint, a top 10 offense. But I've said I don't think that this is going to be like Peyton Manning goes to the Broncos or Tom Brady goes to the Bucks and they start throwing the ball all over the yard. Because look at the just to compare receiver cores here. I mean, the Denver Broncos with Peyton Manning, they had Eric Decker, Demaryius Thomas, late Demaryius Thomas, Julius Thomas had that breakout year. They at times had like Wes Welker. They cycled in Emmanuel Sanders at one point. With the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, they had Mike Evans, they had Chris Godwin, they had Antonio Brown before that thing all fell apart. The Jets receiver room is, which I think could be great for Garrett Wilson in fantasy. It's Garrett Wilson and then kind of a lot of role players, right? Mm-hmm. They just signed Randall Cobb. Of course, they signed Randall Cobb. They have signed Alan Lazard. They've got Corey Davis is still on the roster. Remains to be seen if he's going to stay on the roster. Mecole Hardman, by the way, if Corey Davis is probably, if I'm ranking all these receivers, is number two in terms of ability, and he might not be on the roster. Mecole Hardman's a gadget guy. The tight end room is a little crowded. You know, CJ Uzoma, Tyler Conklin, they spent a third round pick on a tight end last year. Breece Hall, I love Breece Hall, but I still think he will kind of be the central force of the offense. But from a fantasy standpoint, he might start slow in the first few weeks of the season coming back from that injury, kind of like we saw, not like J.K. Dobbins, that disaster, but like Saquon Barkley the couple years before that off the torn ACL. So I like your hedge of, not a hedge, but I like your ranking of the Jets here, that I think they might be a really good real-life NFL offense, but maybe other than Garrett Wilson and Breece Hall, maybe not the best fantasy offense.
So where are we drafting Garrett Wilson?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think he's a somewhere between receiver 7 and 8 in your rankings this year. I like Amon-Ra St. Brown a little bit ahead of him. I've seen that debate pop up. St. Brown, I think, is in a great situation without Jameson Williams there for the first 6 weeks. He's just such an easy layup target. I think that he's a guy I'll take over Garrett Wilson. But Scott, you just, again, look at the names I just read off in the receiver room. Who are you giving 100 plus targets to, 110 targets to in that receiver room? I think Garrett Wilson, as long as he and Rodgers click, and I know Rodgers is like the quarterback we love to psychoanalyze the most in the NFL, and he kind of, I think, enjoys being that guy at times. I think that as long as those two guys click from a relationship chemistry standpoint, Garrett Wilson should walk into the year with like 140 targets booked going his direction.
Yeah, I bet the over on that too. I think he'll be a top of that second half, top of the fold second round pick this year.
He legit showed superstar potential as a rookie. Only other team I think is interesting in this tier before we move to the next one is Cleveland. I think there's a chance that Cleveland could be like Indianapolis. I you know, take that we could look at them as a top 10 team in your rankings by the end of the season. It's all, and I know it never feels great to talk about Deshaun Watson, and I know it never feels great to like, ooh, I cross my fingers Deshaun Watson really redeems himself from an on-field perspective. But if he's something closer to the version he was in Houston than the disaster that he was in his 6 games with the Cleveland Browns, Elijah Moore is here. Amari Cooper's here. Cedric Tillman, they draft. DPJ is now probably like their 4th receiver, maybe 3rd receiver while Cedric Tillman gets up to speed. I think any of like Moore and Cooper could end up being fantasy starters. David Njoku could be a fantasy starter. Nick Chubb, I think, is ready to go to the moon here this year with Kareem Hunt off the roster. They're a team, I think, if Watson is up to snuff, they could be they could really outkick 16 here.
Totally agree. You just can't take Watson's play last year at face value. He'd missed almost 2 full seasons. So yeah, the fact that he played so poorly is probably to be expected, all kicking off all the rust. And now he gets to do all the stuff in the offseason and the summer that you want to do and building chemistry. As you said, the skill pieces are pretty good here. I think they have an above average receiver room, and Nick Chubb is still one of the top 5 or 6 running backs in the NFL. I'm excited to see what he might do with a little bit more work. It's hard to talk about Watson like a regular player just with all the backstory there, but the bottom line is you just throw out what he showed last year. That's not reflective of the player he's going to be on the field. Maybe he'll never get it back. Maybe he'll never get his mojo back. We have to consider that. But there's also the possibility that he becomes a really good player again.
Okay, top tier here. These are the teams, you know, we love them for fantasy. You know, straight up, some of the best ecosystems in the NFL. Number 12, Minnesota Vikings. Number 11, Miami Dolphins. Number 10, Jacksonville Jaguars. Number 9, LA Chargers. Number 8, Kansas City Chiefs. Number 7, Seattle Seahawks. Number 6, Dallas Cowboys. Number 5, Buffalo Bills. Number 4, San Francisco 49ers. Number 3, Cincinnati Bengals. Number 2, Baltimore Ravens. Number 1, Philadelphia Eagles. I want to go to number 8 here, Kansas City. Look, Travis Kelce. It doesn't get any better, won't get any better, may never get any better than Travis Kelce at tight end in fantasy. You've got Patrick Mahomes, of course, but who's the 3rd best fantasy option? Who's not even just 3rd, who's the 3rd and 4th best fantasy option on this team? Is there any hope for like an Isaiah Pacheco full emergence? Is there any hope for, you know, one of these? Do you have any hope for any of the receivers on this roster? Is this purely like Mahomes and Kelce are so good? You're thinking exactly what the Kansas City Chiefs do in real life, that they're going to drag whoever along with them.
Again, understand, dear listener, what the exercise is. I mean, I know that the Chiefs just won the Super Bowl. I know Mahomes just won his 2nd MVP. And Kelce's already in the Hall of Fame. As far as I'm concerned, Andy Reid's already in the Hall of Fame. And all Mahomes has to do is just, you know, book a few more seasons. He's already on that Hall of Fame trajectory too. But the problem, the reason why I had to rank them here is, you know, Pacheco's a maybe. And look at their receiver room, you know, MVS, Tony, Sky Moore, Richie James. Can you talk yourself into any of these guys? Also, Kelce's into an age 34 season.
Yeah.
Yep. What would happen to this offense if anything happened to Kelce? And look, he's been incredibly durable, and we can't necessarily assume he's going to get hurt, but that's an age pocket that makes me nervous. So the bottom line is this. And you know, last year, I know Evan Silva was pounding the table on this, maybe Levitan too, the great guys at ETR. You know, when are you ever going to get this cheap of a Mahomes and Kelce stack? That's gone. You know, Kelce was near the top. I think he might have been the number 1 or number 2 player in Yahoo MVPs, the player who moved the needle the most based on where they were drafted and how they impacted the best teams in Yahoo Fantasy. Now Kelce's going to be in the first round or at the latest, maybe the early second round in Mahomes. We're going to see. We talked a lot about there's going to probably be a groundswell of quarterbacks are going to move up because the position hasn't been as deep lately. And the quarterbacks who augment their value with either a lot of running or, in the case of Mahomes, more strategic running and more resourceful running. But you know, the pocket guys are getting phased out. Somehow Kirk Cousins had the number one receiver last year and he was still just quarterback 8, which is a pretty nifty trick when you play a full season. But it feels uncomfortable to have Kansas City at 8 because they have the best quarterback in the league and the best, I think, probably the best game designer in the league and the best tight end in the league. But I just don't know. I have to pause with everybody else. I can't draft Pacheco confidently, and he's the third musketeer here. Is there a receiver here? You're Mr. Receiver. Who's the receiver we should be drafting in Kansas City?
My favorite bet right now is Sky Moore, just because I liked him as a prospect. I think when he was on the field, very limited glimpses, showed you some potential to be a decent route runner. But you know, he's no guarantee. He did nothing as a rookie. I think that was probably by design. I think that their receiver, Rashee Rice, will be on a similar, like the rookie they took in the second round this year out of SMU. I think they'll have him on a similar developmental plan. Like we're getting you up to speed in this offense, which is a tough offense to learn as a rookie. And you'll be a 24 guy. And I think Sky Moore is designed to be a 23 guy here to take Juju's now vacated role as that big, as like a slot receiver. So I think he's the one I'd take, but it's not with like the same confidence that I even took with Juju last year. Just because Juju had a proven resume, not a Tony guy. We know what MVS's role is. So yeah, I'm with you that 8 feels, in some ways, from a real life perspective, 8 feels disrespectful. But in fantasy, you could almost be like, you know what? They could maybe be 12 just because they might not have anything close to a third fiddle, where in Minnesota, you know, Kirk Cousins, like you said, QB8, passable starter. They'll probably have either Cook or Madison. Whoever ends up being the starter there will be good. Jefferson's the best receiver in the world. Addison probably gives them something. Mm-hmm. The damn Dolphins have 2 potential top 10 receivers. Whoever starts at running back will be good. Tua will be good. That's 4. You know, LA Chargers, like there's definitely Herbert, the 2 receivers, who, if they stay healthy, Keenan Allen, Mike Williams, Quentin Johnson will have some moments. Austin Eckler is a top 5 pick in every draft. You know, Jacksonville too. Like Jacksonville's 10th. That feels exciting. Trevor Lawrence could have a breakout quarterback season. Christian Kirk's awesome. Calvin Ridley, I'm getting excited about. Evan Ingram getting excited about. You know, Travis Etienne. Like, that's 5 dudes. So in some ways, I could see all of those teams from a pure fantasy ranking being ahead of Kansas City, which is blasphemous from an NFL standpoint. But from fantasy, it might make sense if nobody in that receiver corps steps up, which is an if.
Jacksonville's a really fun team. I mean, Lawrence took the step up with the improved coaching staff. They got a lot of giggles when they went out and signed Kirk and made the move for Engram and everything. And those guys worked out. Now they get Ridley back, who's still awfully young and, you know, so motivated. Good. And even with all these names, their tree is still pretty narrow. And it's just one back and that you have to think about, and Etienne, who obviously spread his wings last year. And then they make the playoffs with the late push. Lawrence was really good. I think 15 touchdowns, 2 interceptions in the second half of the year. They have the big comeback against the Chargers. They're interesting to me. Isn't it funny with Tua that last year the question was, can Tua play? This year the question is, can Tua stay on the field? Yeah, Tua can play. And by the way, what quarterback wouldn't like to be throwing the ball to Tyreek Hill and Jalen Waddle? It was just ridiculous. I will fight back a little bit on their running backs. I think trying to find fantasy value in their running back room has been frustrating in the last few years, and I'm not convinced we'll get it. But Tyreek Hill's uncoverable. Yeah. He's just a guy who, just when he's on the field, he changes everything. And Jalen Waddle would be a number one anywhere else. He's probably the 1A there. And I just hope Tua can, you know, he admitted he thought about retiring. Wasn't sure if he wanted to come back. And it's scary when we start talking about things like concussions and, you know, is your head right? And you feeling butterflies and everything. It's tough. Scary stuff, man. I'd love to see Tua get a healthy season because, I mean, this guy could be in the MVP conversation.
Yeah, I totally get it. I would love to see that as well, especially after talking to him at the Super Bowl, man. Like that was just like you felt how much like that meant to him and how much he really wants to, you know, like the real, like the risks he knew too, like that he, I don't know. I hope it works out for him. Your top 7 teams, I think Seattle might take people by surprise, but I get it. What do you think about that backfield situation now? Now that they have Zach Charbonnet in the mix with Kenneth Walker, because the receiver room is great. We know that they add Jaxon Smith-Njigba. I think Geno can be a top five quarterback again. But just real quick before we hit a couple of these teams in the top five, what do you think about this running back situation?
I still think Walker's the guy. They know that most teams are going to use some version of 65-35, 60-40, 70-30. They still want Walker to be a quasi. What is effectively a quasi bell cow now? Nobody. I guess maybe Derrick Henry will lead the league in carries. And by the way, Derrick Henry into an age 29 season, he led the league in carries 3 out of the last 4 years. I know last year he beat it. I'm not going to draft Derrick Henry proactively, but I think Walker is actually set up to maybe be a little bit of a fantasy value because maybe the Charbonnet presence will be a little bit overrated by the market. This is still a very – they don't throw the tight end much. Geno isn't going to run all that much. They have three dynamic receivers. And Jigba, a lot of people thought, might have been the best – talent of the receiver class. There's a lot of different opinions there. And man, Ohio State.
What a factory.
Yeah, I mean, Marvin Harrison Jr. coming out next year, right? I mean, he hardly played as a rookie. And then he gets on the field for the ball game and he's awesome. You know, we always talk about Jameson Williams had to leave Ohio State to get playing time. So he went to a team named Alabama to actually get on the field because Ohio State was blocking him. That's just how talented the royalty of Ohio State receivers. And it goes way back, man. I mean, I still remember Terry Glenn playing great Ohio State and David Boston and all this stuff. I mean, it's been unbelievable. But Geno's legit. They gave him 3 years, $75 million. It's just funny. A year ago, it's like, oh, is it Geno? Is it Drew Locke? How bad are the Seahawks going to be? They were 175-1 to win the Super Bowl last year. They obviously didn't win the Super Bowl, but they made the playoffs. I thought they were going to be the worst team in that division. They obviously weren't. And I think Geno's legit, man. And not only is he legit, but how could you not be legit throwing to these three guys? And Walker, I think, would be a sneaky value this year. Maybe not sneaky, but I think some people will shy away from Walker, and I think they're making a mistake.
Totally get that. Couple teams just here in the top five. Number one, San Francisco. It's hilarious. There's quarterback certainty from 1 to 12, and then there's one like San Francisco's ranked fourth. We have no idea who their week one starting quarterback might be. And it might very well be Sam frickin' Darnold, by the way. So but I totally get it because CMC's the top. He's an easy number 1-2 pick in fantasy drafts. He's great. Debo's great. Kittle's great. Ayuk, I think, can take yet another step this year. So I totally agree with that. The one team I think people might think is spicy is number 2, the Baltimore Ravens. Scott, I'm totally drinking the Todd Monken Kool-Aid. I am ready to have my heart broken by injuries with this receiver room, but Odell, Rashad Bateman, Zay Flowers, absolutely love it. Mark Andrews is still there. And like now with Lamar signed and, you know, saying he did his press conference today, it's like, I don't care about the past. I'm all focused on the future. I think the future is really, really bright for the Ravens. And clearly you do too.
I'll just say quickly about San Francisco. If every team had a standard automatic quarterback who was the same level for everybody, who would have the best offense in the NFL? It would be San Francisco or Philadelphia. Yep. I think it'd be really, really close. That's how good the San Francisco skill talent is. I think everybody knows this, but I just want to underscore it. With Baltimore, I ranked them second, and that's even accepting that I'm probably going to be one of the low men on OBJ. I wonder if the cheese has gone bad for him. It's just been so long since he's been an impact player. And if he was willing to kind of be what DeSean Jackson was at the last lap of his career. It's like, okay, you're going to stretch the field. You're going to help us more than you actually help us in this box score, help us for fantasy. You're going to do a lot of clear out routes. You're going to do a lot of things that help other people succeed. If they could sell Beckham on that, I think he'd be really useful. I'm not sure they can. Bringing him to town is like bringing the circus to town. But Jackson's been hurt. Hopefully he'll have a healthy season. He finally got that contract thing, which again, it seemed like it went on for 18 months. It feels like that was forever, but that's finally solved. Offensive coordinator we trust. And even if OBJ brings him nothing, we all love Zay Flowers, right? We all love Bateman, just needs to stay healthy. J.K. Dobbins, just another year removed from a major injury. I guess some people would say, well, it's crazy to have them at 2. Well, you got to have them somewhere in the top 5 or 6, right? I mean, they have more pieces in Kansas City, even though Mahomes and Kelsey are much more bankable than maybe the Baltimore infrastructure. But I mean, it's just more guys you're going to draft. Mark Andrews is a dynamite tight end. I haven't even mentioned his name yet. So you have to have Baltimore somewhere in that top 5 or 6. I rank them second because you could say something negative about all the other teams, right? I mean, Cincinnati, their running back room is a big mess. We don't know if Mixon's going to be anything. Now, having Cincinnati 3 is with the understanding that they have three draftable guys that you're excited about. It may just be Burrow, Higgins, and Chase. Those are real dynamite players. Chase could be the number one receiver. Burrow could be the number one quarterback. Higgins could be a Pro Bowl guy. He's an awfully good number two. But we have to throw in that question. The Niners, they don't know about the quarterbacks. The Buffalo backfield is a mess. And it says in the outline, makes sense of the running back situation. I'm not sure that I can. I still wish they added another impact receiver, which they weren't able to do, although they did add tight Kincaid, who's going to be kind of a hybrid tight end anyway. So maybe that kind of checks that box. I think Dallas is interesting. We talked about in a previous pod with Ezekiel Elliott gone. Maybe this is a year where they need more of their touchdowns to come through the air. They get Brandon Cooks, who I still think can play. CeeDee Lamb is spreading his wings. Dak Prescott's been down for a couple of reasons. Last year, was the thumb injury early in the season. I think he's ready for a bounce back year. So any of these teams could all be number two, but there could only be one number one, man. And, yeah, and I know,
so you know, easy.
Philly loses the coordinator, and that hurts. But Hurts is a dual threat, and the backfield reloads, and A.J. Brown can win all over the field, and Devonta Smith with A.J. Brown is unfair, and then they have Dallas Goedert, who's like a Pro Bowl-level tight end. To have all these guys on the same team, I don't know how you stop them. And, you know, it's weird. Kansas City won the Super Bowl. Philadelphia was one or two plays away from winning it. In a lot of ways, I feel like Philadelphia owned the season, even though the Chiefs got the parade and everything. They were obviously the team with the best record, and they're going to be – I know people talk about, oh, the Super Bowl jinx, you lose the Super Bowl, you have a terrible year next year. I don't know. It's just, there's not enough iterations for me to put stock in that. Philadelphia's going to have a lot of things go wrong. And I have even mentioned the offensive line, which still might be the best in football.
Yeah.
They are unfair. When I was doing this, I really debated and hemmed and hawed about, you know, I don't know if Kansas City should be as low as 8. I don't know if Baltimore should be as high as 2. You know, I knew the moment I started this project that there could only be one team that would be number one. That was Philadelphia. Now, full disclosure, that's how I felt about Buffalo last year. I don't feel that way about Buffalo right now. I have them at 5, which is still a reasonable ranking, but I just feel like the Eagles are. It's like you see those grids where the one team is like the outlier. They're barely even on the chart. That's how I feel about the Eagles right now.
Totally agree. Now, there's a chance the backfield could be a bit of a mess with injuries and these guys kind of cycle in and out. Rashad Penny, DeAndre Swift now. Like, it might just be Kenny Gainwell and Boston Scott by the end of the year, just given the durability of those other two guys. But still,
I swear Scott's 43 years old. I swear he's been there for, I mean, he played with Randall Cunningham. You know, he played with Bobby Hoying and, you know, all these other guys.
He at least played with Kevin Cobb.
Kevin Cobb, man. I believe for about 10 seconds. Then he went to the Cardinals. I stopped believing.
Yeah, it's a place where
I think the Eagles fans are still booing Kevin Cobb. That's how bad it went for him in Philadelphia.
I mean, they got a second round pick out of it, so there is that. But all right, Scott, this was awesome. Appreciate you doing this. Can't wait to check in on these later on in the offseason and then in the regular season. Tell the folks where they can find all of your justification online with these and anything else you got going on.
Yeah, catch me at Twitter, Scott_Pianowski, where a lot of baseball, occasional golf, a lot of football. We're always in season at Yahoo Sports. And I want to say thank you to you. This was actually your idea to take this article and make it into a podcast. And it's been a really fun talk. And, you know, I like to share credit when it's due. This was an idea sparked in your mind, and I'm glad you had it.
Appreciate it, buddy. Well, listen, literally couldn't have done it without you. It was all your thing. So I'm just glad we got to highlight your good work. And again, make sure you go and read the piece at yahoosports.com. Where you'll be able to find it in the fantasy section. Of course, Scott will definitely tweet it out. The Yahoo Fantasy handle will tweet it out. So make sure you go find it so you can read about some of the teams we did not talk about here and Scott's, you know, overhead thoughts on them all. That's great. He's at Scott_Pianowski. I'm at Matt_BYB. If you want to tell me how much you like this episode, or hey, how about you rate and review the podcast? That would be awesome. We could use some new reviews. Be sure to come back next Tuesday. We've got late round quarterback himself, JJ Zacharyson, joining me for a dynasty rookie mock draft. The first few picks feel pretty clear, but man, it gets messy after that. So it's going to be a great debate, great deep dive. Until then, we're out.